At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is the Goalkeepers Union podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Between the Sticks, me, Matt Beadle, here with the Flemish voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Good morning, Matthew.
Good morning, Richard. Talk to me.
I was in Brugge.
Nice, very good. We've learned some new words, haven't we, of late?
That's the only one I've learned. That's the only one. I've been over there a few times now, but Brugge, that's how you pronounce it.
Okay, so not Bruges,
nope.
As some people say.
No, nope. Brugge. I think I've got that right. When they actually do it, when they do it properly, it's even more in the throat. You know, it's a real, I don't think I can actually make the sound. Brugge. It's really, yeah. I mean, I've just tried and I've failed.
Sound like you're cold, mate. Yeah, sound like you're a bit chilly over there.
Yeah, it's difficult. It's difficult. But that is where I've been, yes. It's a very eventful few days and obviously a good result for young Joe Bursic.
Yes, absolutely. So I'm very much looking forward to GKs on their way later on in the show because it feels like last week you did say, do you know what? We've had a couple of days, but I reckon as of this afternoon / tomorrow, things are going to really start to get going. And my word, they have, including this deal, Joe Bursic from Stoke to Club Bruges or Club Brugge.
Yes, indeed. And I feel, and again, I sort of say I feel, I kind of, obviously I've got a bit of an inside insight here, but I think we're going to see a lot more in the coming week as well. There's, yeah, a lot going on in the goalkeeping world at the moment. And again, I'm sure we'll get into that further in the show.
Yes, we will. But let's talk about this one now, because this is a deal that's come from nowhere, completely left field. I don't think anyone in the world of football, certainly in the Championship, saw this deal coming. So just talk to us. Obviously, you work with Joe Bursic. Talk to us about how this deal was conceived and how you managed to get it over the line.
Yeah, so it's probably quite a long story, so I won't go into full details. But what I will say is that Joe found himself in a bit of a frustrating position at Stoke, in that he's been in the team a few times over the past year, 18 months or so, but has come out of the team several times, and I know I'm a bit biased on this, but I think harshly at times he's come out of the team. So where he found himself in the position where there wasn't an obvious route back into the team, it's always a case, I suppose, for an agent to then look at what alternatives there could be. Now, truthfully, at the moment in the Championship, there's not a great deal of money being spent on goalkeepers. So you then have the option of, do you then go to the Premier League? You might then be a two or a three, possibly a three, given that he's obviously a little bit younger. There is then the potential to go on loan, possibly, but you do see certain goalkeepers that may go in there and don't necessarily get that pathway. So this one, it did come up out of nowhere to an extent, but they really, in the way in which Club Brugge operate, they're very much looking for the younger players they can really develop, you know, the chance to play Champions League football. Obviously, some huge games in Belgium, many big clubs in the league. So the whole thinking is, if they can bring in a Jadon Sancho going abroad or a Bellingham going abroad, the same kind of idea, bring in a young English goalkeeper they can help develop further, get into their first team, and at some point down the line, whether he's the Club Brugge goalkeeper for the next 15 years or whether in 3 or 4 years there is the opportunity to potentially sell him to the Premier League, it's one where they see it as a really interesting project. And certainly for those that have seen Joe play, he's got all the attributes of a top keeper. So we just felt that, you know, a slightly different platform at the moment, where the momentum wasn't necessarily with him at Stoke, given that he wasn't in the team. He's gone to a place now where, obviously under Scott Parker as well and Rob Birch as a goalkeeper coach, it's a place that he can develop and hopefully in time secure that spot as first choice goalkeeper ahead of Simon Mignolet.
Very, very exciting times for Joe Bursic, of course, an England established England under 21 international. And you'd like to think with this move and then the next couple of years to see how it pans out in Belgium, this could be a goalkeeper that is Premier League bound and maybe international bound at senior level too.
Yeah, indeed. I think at some point, and certainly I go back to those examples I gave before, like you're seeing it more and more. You haven't seen it with a goalkeeper, which is quite interesting. You know, a lot of the players that we see go abroad, a lot of them obviously do end up back in England at some point. So there's obviously a very good chance that could happen further down the line. But I think if he can follow in the footsteps of a Jadon Sancho or a Jude Bellingham, he'll be in a good place.
Good stuff. As per usual, plenty coming up, all four tiers of English football, plus a tiny bit more. On with the show.
Let's do it.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
So we will start in the Premier League. Of course we will. Two huge games involving the top six. Two huge derbies. Two or perhaps three, to be fair, major goalkeeping talking points. We'll start in... Where should we start? Should we go north? Let's start in North London, shall we? Tottenham 0, Arsenal 2. So plenty said on Hugo Lloris yet again. This seems like a regular occurrence, doesn't it now? And more often than not, criticism is defended on this podcast. But where are you now at with Hugo Lloris? There is the argument of no smoke without fire, I suppose. And yes, with a goalkeeper, that's normally misguided. But the opener here, credited as an own goal. Your thoughts?
Okay, this probably isn't going to be a popular opinion because I know the world is coming in on Hugo Lloris. And again, I'll try and look at everything as objectively as I possibly can. Now, what I'll say firstly is that it was so interesting watching the two goalkeepers make saves, which they both did in the game, and the reaction to the saves that both goalkeepers made. You know, it was a Ramsdale loving, and he did play brilliantly, by the way. You know, again, he's been so consistent, and I'm loving the energy he's playing with. But the difference in analysis and commentary when he made a save, as opposed to when Hugo Lloris made a save, was so noticeable. You know, embarrassingly noticeable. Like, Hugo Lloris makes a great save down in the bottom left corner, you know, gets a hand round the post, and it was almost as if he wasn't part of whatever happened. You know, they spoke about the strike, they spoke about everything surrounding the save except the save himself. When he came out on the one-on-one and spread himself brilliantly, again, all they were talking about was the ball through, the touch, oh, maybe should do better with the finish. No, Hugo Lloris has come off his line very quickly and made an excellent save. Now, on the goal, what do I think about the goal? Honestly, I think he's really, really unlucky. Like, they've slowed it down into super, super, super slow motion, and yet it looks bad. But again, any goalkeeper will tell you, the moment it's struck, if it takes a deflection and you're expecting the ball to go somewhere, he is caught by surprise. What, 5 yards from him, there's a bit of pace on the ball. He's caught by surprise and he just can't get his hands in a position to get the ball into a safe area. Now look, it ends in the net and it looks bad. And it's one of them where you kind of feel when things are going against you, how often does it happen that, you know, it just seemingly you don't get a bit of luck. But this, for me, it's not a bad mistake. It genuinely isn't a bad mistake because of the fact it took the deflection. It's coming at pace. If you watch it in real time, then it's so quick. Like, I don't know how he can react quick enough to actually parry it into a good area. But of course, the moment it happens, Gary Neville, you know, the usual type of Gary Neville commentary. Was it Jamie Redknapp putting his intelligent insight in afterwards? I mean, again, it just, yeah, I wouldn't watch it if it wasn't for the fact that you actually send the footage through to me and I have to listen to them, because honestly, they're not able to give that perspective other than, oh, it's so poor, it's so poor. I've been saying it about this goalkeeper for a while now, etc., etc., etc. So yeah, like I said, I know most people are going to look and say it's a bad error. I'm sure that Hugo Lloris will feel he could have maybe done more. Yeah, granted. However, I know as a goalkeeper, a ball from that close in that takes a deflection, you're not able to sort your hands out, you are reliant on a bit of luck, and he got zero luck here.
Okay, we've had some tweets in, so I'm going to quickly read these. Pretty much saying what you're saying, but just so we can give the Twitter sphere some love. So, at goalkeepers of non-league, deflection does him no favours at all. If you've played the game, you know what that deflection can do. But he will still be disappointed with the goal, no doubt. Didn't seem ready, bracket set, or react quick enough. Who'd be a keeper? It's a tough gear. Chris Brat Rose says, just hold your position, stand tall, keep your shape. Stephen Cutliffe, hand on post might have cost him a split second reacting time. Martin Cassidy, like De Gea last week, a needless hand on the post is something a kid would do. Deflection cost him no favours, but in a proper position, he can probably react easily and parry out safely. He was abysmal, he says, with his feet today too. Christopher at CK Black M says, it looked like it, just surprised him. Wonder if he was taking a peek to see who was around at the time or if the deflection was enough to throw him off. And Josh Banksy says, wasn't even set properly. One more, Gary Green says, it's terrible for a goalkeeper at that level, if not most levels. That's a simple catch. Lloris always has a mistake in him. And that's what I wanted to get onto. By the way, you speak about pundits too. Louis Saha a refreshing breath of fresh air, because he actually said, listen, I mean, there might be the French connection there, which is why he was saying it, but he was saying, I think the goalkeeper's unlucky. As much as David Jones, the presenter, kept trying to say, but the goalkeeper, Louis, but the goalkeeper, Jamie. And Louis was like, no, he was unlucky. In the Premier League, things happen really, really quickly. And he says, you know, everybody could be a goalkeeper, but often it's not always the goalkeeper's fault. In so many words, that's what Louis Saha was saying. But as I said at the top of this particular point, we are getting to talking about Hugo Lloris making some form of error on a fortnightly basis now. I'm in your corner, I'm in Lloris's corner, but is it a case that he is making more mistakes than he used to?
I mean, look, I don't think so necessarily. I do think at the moment the momentum is against him. You know, we spoke about that before and how tough it can be to turn that momentum. It's going to take him a long time, given the weight of... go back to the commentators, you know, how do you win over a Gary Neville? How do you win over a Jamie Redknapp or some of these when they've got it in their mind already, a preconceived idea going into the game as to what they think of him? So he, even if he has a worldie, which he's had plenty lately, I always refer back to the game against England. You know, I thought he was fantastic and had a good World Cup. But again, how many good games do you need to have before suddenly that shifts in a positive way again? Look, a couple of the points made there just quickly as well. I will say, like, look, I do agree with the whole hand on the post. I know we talked about it a lot in the last pod. I do agree with that. If you look, though, his movement, as the ball's coming across, he's already starting to go because you're expecting the ball to go across face. So then, of course, you would then turn in back on your line. You'd have the half goal when you'd look to make the save. You can see he's already started to make that movement. Hence why, again, another Gary Neville special. He's got his weight on his heels. He's leaning backwards. No, what he's doing, he's turning into goal, ready for the shot. So, of course, he's going to have to move backwards to turn in, to defend the half goal, to then make the save. So, of course, his weight's backward. But again, they haven't broke it down in that way. All they've looked at is, oh, he's leaning backwards, he's off balance, he's this, that, the other. But so much of that is driven by the fact that the ball was due to be going across him to the 6-yard box and he's expecting to turn and have to make a save. So yeah, look, some really good valid points on Twitter, I must say. And like you say, and pretty much I think it was the first tweet you read out, I would go with that. Look, it's one that for me I think he's dreadfully unlucky. At the same time, I'm sure that he'll say, yeah, I feel I could have done a little bit more. Do I think the mistakes are getting bigger? Again, I'll use that phrase again. I just think overfamiliarity. I think this is leading one way. I don't think the change will happen in January. I think that he'll stay until the end of the season. But I think also for his sake, because he's been so brilliant for so many years, it is just a bit sad to see when the narrative shifts and it just seems like you can't do anything to shift that narrative back. I mentioned the saves he made in the game. They went completely unrewarded, completely unmentioned. And no doubt he'll be getting threes and fours in the paper. And actually, most goalkeepers looking, again, we can talk about distribution. That's something a little bit different. And yeah, I think that's a separate conversation in terms of what he's giving the team from a possession output. But I think purely when we're talking about the shot-stopping element, yeah, I do think he has been a bit unfortunate in recent times. I just don't see the narrative changing anytime soon.
You mentioned distribution there. There were a couple of sneers for the second goal too from Martin Odegaard. Now, Gary Neville alluded to the fact that he didn't like goalkeepers and said, this is a goal that the goalkeeper wouldn't ordinarily be blamed for, but I don't like my goalkeepers to be beaten from that type of distance. Just a ridiculous piece of analysis. But Paul Merson in the studio then said that Hugo Lloris was culpable for the second goal because of a goal kick that was from 1989 or something. Now, if Merson had watched this closer, he would have seen that Lloris was actually trying to find options before he went long. There were two defenders either side of him, but I think his feeling was that if he gave it to them, it would have been the same outcome as if he was to launch it long, which is what he eventually did. Now, Spurs weren't able to maintain possession, but that isn't Hugo Lloris's fault. Paul Merson suggested that as a result of him going long, the central midfielders were then out of position. But there were so many variables before it ended up back with Odegaard, who then struck from 15, 20 yards.
Again, for me, I come back to the idea in psychology that you find what you're looking for. You know, if you want to look for a goalkeeper and look for the positives in a goalkeeper, then you'll find them. And similarly, at the moment, of course, if you pick any goalkeeper's game apart, you'll find small details that aren't quite right. You know, and that being an example, as you say, he looked to play out. He couldn't. At that point, everyone should squeeze up and then he kicks along like he did. So again, what more, how much more can he control? And the goal itself, it's a brilliant finish. Again, to label any blame, I mean, to say that, oh, I'd expect my goalkeeper to make a save from that distance. Well, that's not always the case. If it's drilled really hard into the bottom corner as it is, there's not many goalkeepers in the world that can save that ball. So yeah, I just find that it is a little bit of that you will find what you're looking for.
Okay, well, you mentioned it there as well, that narrative. What tends to happen, right, in a scenario such as this one, especially when a goalkeeper's narrative is on the positive side and when their credit is high, is that pretty much anything they do at the other end in a game like this is amplified somewhat because of the fact that their counterpart, in this case Lloris, on a negative narrative and low credit, which is just ridiculous, has made a big error. And in this instance, it was Aaron Ramsdale. 7 saves from him. Really good one from Ryan Sessegnon, as Spurs at the time were threatening, I guess, to just sort of come back into the game. He was decent aerially, all round a good performance, and given MOM, man of the match, on Sky Sports, much to the chagrin of some Spurs fans. Let's talk about the scenes at the end of this one, because mind-blowing.
Yeah, look, it's one of them. I found it odd that Richarlison took exception to the fact that he was kissing the badge. Like, again, it's not like he's gone and done anything overly bad. He was having, obviously, banter with the fans back and forth. This is what Aaron Ramsdale does, and the fans love it. The opposition fans love it. They're giving him stick. He's giving a bit back. Now, you know, whether, I think we spoke about this before on the pod, but as a goalkeeper, you choose a personality, effectively, in terms of how you're going to play the game. Now, Aaron Ramsdale's chosen this personality that he's going with. And I say he's chosen it. Of course, it is him, naturally. And it's working for him. He's expressing himself. He likes to have fun with the opposition fans. They'll give him a bit back. And again, it just adds to the day, adds to the entertainment. So there's no real issue with that. So at the end, when he's kissing the badge, it's a minor thing, you know, to then look at the Spurs fans. It's been a good day for him. He's kissed the badge. You know, it's all good fun. So for Richarlison to take exception to that, I found a bit strange. And credit to Aaron Ramsdale, he didn't then engage with Richarlison when he was trying to, you know, get on him at the end. He then walked to the back of his goal, and yeah, for a fan to jump over, I mean, just ridiculous. And again, we use the word intelligence a lot on this show, but emotional intelligence. I mean, look, they'll enjoy it while the game's going on. They'll give him stick and he'll give a bit back. It's all part of the fun of it. Now, I know that you're upset that you've lost the game, but to jump over like that and kick him in the back is just ridiculous.
It's just bonkers, isn't it? It's absolutely insane. Like, what is wrong with people? What's wrong with people? Just be happy. Don't worry. Don't worry about it. It is just a game. Like you said, it's entertainment. Yes, it means a lot. And yes, football can be tribal. And yes, tensions are running high, especially in a North London derby. But just take a breath. Go home to your partner. Relax. Have a nice evening. Play with your kids. You know, just do something to let your hair down. If you are that angry as an individual, and I get it, sometimes football is about letting out your pent-up frustrations throughout the week. It shouldn't really be, but for some people, it is a release. But to release your anger and your frustration and whatever it is that's causing you issues at that time in such a vitriolic and aggressive way is beyond me. If you really are that angry as an individual, if you really feel the need to scale a fence and kick some guy on a football pitch, just go to the gym, get a punching bag, join a boxing class. I don't know, go to the woods, go into an empty field and just shout into the abyss, shout into the atmosphere to just release your anger. Yes, football is tribal, like I've said, but it is an entertainment. And the fact that this guy as well must have been 10, 20 years Aaron Ramsdale Senior. And that's the thing that gets me. These men, these women, these people who go to football and get really angry and shout expletives at guys and girls that were actually not girls. It doesn't really happen in women's football, does it? It's mainly men's football. But shout expletives at these poor lads who are 10 to 20 years their junior. What's wrong with you? I saw it in the week between Wolves and Forest, the game in the Carabao Cup during the penalty shootout. The anger on the faces of these fans is just beyond me. And I look at when I was younger, I was a bit like that. As a kid, you'd go to football and you'd be a bit abusive. You'd be a bit aggressive, not in a way that you'd need to be arrested by police, but you'd look around you and you'd see these adults doing exactly the same thing. So as an impressionable young lad, that's how you then acted. It's not something I look back on and think, oh yeah, that was good. I look back on and think, why on earth did I do that? But I was young, I was a child, I didn't know any better. As you then get older and you grow up and you become an adult, you realise that that's unacceptable behaviour and you realise the way to behave is the complete opposite of that and to just go and enjoy football and take it for what it is. And when it's over, you go home and you try your hardest to forget about it. You don't scale the hoardings and kick someone. It's just absolutely insane.
Are you an angry man? Call Matt Beadle on 07. Should we, let's set up a, I think this, let's change the GKU number. I think actually you've just, you can give some serious advice here. But no, look, it, yeah, I agree entirely. It baffles me. It makes you question humanity, you know, like, and I get it that they'll have had a few drinks. There'll be emotions running high. They want their team to win. I do get it. Like, I'm similar to you. Like, I'm a football fan as well. And when you go, you get caught up by it. But for it to, like you say, for, like, when you put it in perspective, to get that angry that you feel the need to go and jump over hoardings and try and kick the goalkeeper in the back is just mental.
Yeah, crazy. Okay, well, look, let's move on to...
Do you know what? Before you move on, I did want to talk about his performance very quickly, if that's okay. Can I do that?
Of course, go ahead.
Because he was excellent. He was excellent. We talked about him being kicked in the back, but we haven't talked about the many saves that he made. I just wanted to talk about the one in particular. A couple of things I liked at the end. Great punch. Come and took a good claim as well right at the very end. Just thought really, really confident. Again, he's a big game player and he's showing that more and more. The bigger the game, you know, he loves it. He relishes it, which I think for any young goalkeeper, take something from that. Can you be that character that the bigger the environment, if anything, it just raises your game as opposed to some that might get that bit more nervous or whatever it might look like. I think his mentality, something to learn from there. Yeah, look, there's a few saves of note. One in particular, rushing spread when he came out, rushed out and spread very well was big. But the one on the angle I loved, you know, just with his foot, where he's read the situation, moved his foot so quickly to get a toe to it and put it around the post. I just thought it was exceptional. But yeah, big, big day again for him.
Good stuff. The Manchester Derby, Manchester United 2, Man City 1. We'll keep this one short and sweet. In fact, we'll start with a tweet from Petr Cech, who said the first United goal just proved that people who make the rules don't understand the game. Richard, should it have stood, yes or no?
Absolutely not. This is just mental to me. I'm watching these. Do you know what it was? And actually, this sums up why we do what we do. Because I'm watching the footage after and I'm like, look, I know I've got my thoughts in terms of the pundits and how much they actually know, if anything, about goalkeeping. And I probably made that quite clear. But I'm watching thinking, right, at some point, one of you is going to figure out that the ball's been passed from the halfway line and it's been finished 18 yards out. Edison has stood 12 yards out. So he needs to make up 6 yards to clear that ball. So is Rashford interfering with play? 1,000% he's interfering with play. Edison comes and then plays out to the left back. Like, it's such a simple thing for a goalkeeper to walk 4 or 5 yards and pass it to the left back. So has he impacted Edison? Of course he has. So look, why are you still talking about, you know, the defenders that are on there? Was it probably Neville again? Oh, he said it hasn't changed the defenders' movement. No, I know it hasn't. I'm not saying it has. Has it changed Edison's movement? Of course it has, because Edison is expecting Rashford to come through and finish. If Rashford isn't there, does Edison stand still 12 yards out and wait for whoever it was that came in and scored to then just come and score? No, of course he doesn't. He comes and he intercepts that ball so easily. So therefore, it's offside. He's interfering with play. They even went to the referee. And again, he didn't acknowledge the goalkeeper, whoever the referee was on the pack. Just mental to me.
Yeah, the defenders, I was really surprised by that. It was actually Rio Ferdinand and Jolyon Lescott. It was on BT Sport, wasn't it? And they said that the goal should have stood. Now, Akanji, the Man City centre-back after the game, came out, didn't he, and said it's a joke. Like, I adjusted my position. He played Marcus Rashford offside. We saw it a couple of weeks ago in the FA Cup between Wolves and Liverpool. Mo Salah standing way offside. The centre-back has adjusted his position for that and actually gone for the header just in case Salah had crept back onside. But all the starting positions were as they were because the defender was playing the attacker offside. And then Marcus Rashford has clearly made moves to go for that ball. You can't decide two-thirds into your movement, actually, I'm going to leave it now. You've gone for the ball. You are 100%, like you said, interfering with play. And I hadn't actually considered the fact of Edison sweeping up. Initially, I just thought his attentions were focused purely on Marcus Rashford. So he was setting himself for Rashford, probably going with his left foot. But of course, as you say, he could have just come and swept it up.
Yeah, it's so just so simple. The bit that bugged me again was that, as you say, it was Ferdinand and Lescott, but neither of them mentioned the goalkeeper. And again, reasons why we do what we do. But neither of them could even see the goalkeeper's part in that whole thing. And that was actually, for everything, and like Guardiola was spot on in terms of what he said afterwards. You can see how frustrated he was. And look, it's a huge, huge moment for City. They could end up losing the league by a point or two. And that doesn't go in. They possibly win that game at the point. And yeah, they're now 8 points off Arsenal. It's a huge moment. And I think Guardiola was spot on because he did mention Edison. But it was just the fact that none of the pundits seemed to actually consider that. That was the obvious straight away when I saw it. I'm like, Edison comes and sweeps up. Also, the fact that Edison, look, I think even if you're a goalkeeper that plays quite deep, I think you still come and sweep that. But of course, Edison, front-footed, how many times does he come out 30 yards to sweep things up? So to say that he wouldn't come out 18 yards to sweep it up when it's a ball that's played about 5 yards in the half, you actually consider how far that ball's come, and the whole time Marcus Rashford had it under control. Even though he didn't touch it, he had it under control the whole time. So of course, Edison's not going to come steaming out while there's a chance that Rashford's going to control the ball and finish. So it's just, yeah, just really... You can probably tell I'm getting annoyed today. This is going to be one of those pods where I'm just a bit angry. A few things have happened, don't agree with them. And this one in particular, it was just like, please, at some point, someone acknowledge the goalkeeper.
Okay, well, look, as long as you don't go scaling any hoardings and kicking people in the arse, it'll be okay.
I mean, look, yeah, I would say that I climb over the table and leave a bit on you, but I'm actually doing this remotely again today because of how busy we are. So you're lucky. You're lucky we're not in the same room, Matthew.
Aston Villa 2. Leeds United 1, and Emi Martinez, plenty of proactive goalkeeping from him, a whopper of a stop from Jack Harrison 2. And then just being Emi Martinez as we know and love him throughout, he's really adopted this persona now, hasn't he? More than ever, it feels.
Oh, I thought it was phenomenal. I thought it was absolutely phenomenal. The save into the top left, when you see it from behind the lad that was taking the shot, I mean, that is going right in the top corner. And the speed and power, I mean, just... Again, I know I say this comment a lot, but not many goalkeepers in the world can make that save. You know, just so powerful. How much spring he gets. You know, I'm sure if they were to take a picture when he was in full flight, he's not far off being horizontal with a bar. It's just unbelievable the amount of power he's got. And yeah, it came for some good crosses. One in particular that was complimented right on the, like, beyond the back post. He's come a good 5-6 yards out of his goal as well to claim that. I thought that was excellent. And yeah, arguably a contender for save of the season. The speed at which he moved across the goal, it's that one. It's, you know, dead and buried, has to be a goal. And the speed at which he moved and threw himself, and again, the intelligence he showed to kind of predict where the ball was going to go and make the save, just unbelievable.
A quick word on Ian Melier for the winner, what proved to be the winner from Emi Buendia. Parried it into a dangerous area was the general response from pundits and commentators alike.
No, I mean, I go back to what I said earlier about Hugo Lloris. I think this is where you need a bit of luck. You know, you can't hold that. It's struck with such ferocity. It's a reaction save. You see how quickly he's reacted to make the save. I mean, you could argue, could he be a yard deeper? Maybe, maybe not. That might be the only thing you'd say. But I think that once you've reacted and made the save, again, you're just reliant on a little bit of luck that you can get a big enough hand to it to get it out of danger. But again, there's very little you can control thereafter. And it's unfortunate that obviously there's no one following it up. Obviously, at first, it looks like it's going to be offside. But I know when they did the replays and VAR and all that, obviously was onside. But no, I felt for him. I don't think there's a great deal more he could have done other than arguably be a yard deeper to give himself a little bit more reaction time.
There was also another what is he doing moment, our favourite phrase when it comes to goalkeeping.
Yeah, I'll tell you what he's doing, Gary. He's coming out and he's looking to use his left foot to play it out to the right back. That's what he's looking to do. And he's not quite executed it in the same way that the majority of the outfield players do 5, 6, 7 times a day. So that's exactly what he was trying to do. And then why did he then react like he did afterwards? Because of course he is the goalkeeper. There is nobody in the goal. So he realizes, of course, there's a bit of panic at that moment because, yeah, they're able to pass the ball and, you know, have a free shot of goal, they will score a goal. So that's exactly what he's doing. He's trying to play it out to the fullback, didn't execute it, and then he's just done whatever he needed to do to stop the play there, happily take the yellow at that point. That's what he's doing.
These goalkeepers trying to get involved in the game, eh?
Trying to play. I mean, what are they doing? They think they're good with their feet now.
Such an angry man.
I am.
Okay, finishing up in the Premier League. Kepa keeping a clean sheet. Some vital stops for Chelsea against Crystal Palace. He took a bit of stick, didn't he, in the week for that second goal in the defeat to Fulham. So good to see him yet again, just like Lloris, have to answer the customary critics. Robert Sanchez, a couple of moments for him against Liverpool. A big sprawl across his line in the second half. That was to keep out Cody Gakpo. And then quick thinking in the first half in order to not handle outside of his area. I liked that one. And I just want to bring up save percentage with you. I know that we generally don't refer to it too much. Not a stat goalkeepers are particularly enamoured with. But there was one I wanted to put to you, and that was at Bournemouth, where Neto has a save percentage of 82.9%. As things stand, 9 games for him, 35 shots on target. Compare that to Mark Travers at 51.7%. That's 11 games and 60 shots on targets. That's the lowest in the Premier League. Is that an okay time to use the stat when comparing goalkeepers in the same team?
It's a good question. And again, when you're talking like a case study of, yeah, if he's played nine games, I don't know how many shots it was. Did you say Neto's faced? I'm guessing 30 or 40.
35. So pretty much half of what Travers has faced.
Right. Okay. So, look, I think it's always difficult because, yeah, look, if both goalkeepers play 19 games each, and at that point you probably get a bit of a fair reflection because, yeah, you know what it's like. If you're playing in a team that are struggling like Bournemouth are at the moment, the shots that he is conceding now might be that little bit different to what they were conceding earlier in the season. And again, the saves that Neto were making, we'd have to go through the footage to give a more accurate representation. And that's why I'm always a little bit sceptical because, look, when a team's struggling and they are that much easier to open up and the chances are, you know, ordinarily from within 12 yards, then of course the save percentage is going to be lower. Where you often find the better teams, the goalkeepers will have a higher save percentage because they are forced to shoot on sight and, you know, try and find any way to get a shot on goal. Then of course, if they're from all 20, 30 yards, then the percentage will naturally be that higher. So I'm a little bit reluctant to say that. I still think the XGA, expected goals against, that's as close as we've got now for a, you know, a more accurate representation. I think that's improving all the time and taking into account different types of shots, different situations. But even that, you know, you could still argue there's some goalkeepers that I get the stats through every week, and some goalkeepers that would surprise you where you kind of, on your eye, you know they're having a good season and you know they're being effective, and yet they'll be mid-table or down the bottom. But no, certainly, you know, when I see like Nick Pope's obviously up the top, there are some that the eye very much matches the data. And certainly when it comes to Nick Pope, I'd say that's the case.
Yeah, I'm with you still, by the way. I don't think it's an accurate marker because there is another layer to this particular stat, in that of Travers's 11 games, he's played City, Arsenal, Spurs, Chelsea, Manchester United and Liverpool, which was the 9-0 defeat.
Yeah, and when you consider how many of City's goals are where they just play it across the six-yard box and there's Haaland, or it was all Sterling, wasn't it, for a long time, that was always there just to tap it in, then of course they're going to, I'm sure that their shots on target, their goals per shots on target will be very, very high, given that, you know, I remember we had, this was years ago when Eddie Boothroyd was our manager at Watford, and there was a period of time where he effectively banned us from shooting outside the box just because the probability was so low from scoring outside the box. And City kind of represent this. They play in such a way where, you know, they won't just take shots from 30 yards. It's very rare you see them do that. They will always, they'd rather have five shots a game from within 12 yards than 20 shots a game from 30 yards, you know, naturally. So they're always looking to get that bit closer. So I think that's where the save percentage is always going to be a bit of a difficult one. And just to round up, because I know you mentioned a few things there before you mentioned the save percentage, I just want to talk about, in fact, give a little bit of a round up of my own, if that's all right, because Kepa, as you mentioned, I was really, really pleased for him, because I think, you know, I mentioned Lloris earlier, I think where Kepa's got a little bit of stick again last couple of games, Chelsea having a really tough time, and he's put in a big performance in this game. You know, a couple of the saves top left, the top hand I thought was excellent, another good save top left, brilliant reaction save as well, so I was really pleased with him. Guaita made an excellent save as well in this one down left, one of the saves of the season, that one, I thought, to get down as quickly as he did and get a good hand around the post. Rob Sanchez, yeah, kind of went, I know it's funny when you read some of these reports, I saw one report that gave him a 6 and then the next one that gave him a 9. In fact, I saw there was another one that, and it will come to me in a minute, where literally one reporter gave him a 4 and the next reporter gave him a 9. It just always cracks me up how different someone can see a performance. But I thought Sanchez, yeah, a couple of big moments in particular. I thought it was very quick thinking to come out and slide in the first half and be able to be completely in control and let go of the ball at just the right time. Thought that was very good. Full stretch save in his second half. Again, excellent, moved across the goal very well. And the other one I just wanted to mention, Jordan Pickford, great save onto the post. I would question his strategy on the free kick. I've watched it a few times and I can't see any deflection there. And I just feel, again, it's sort of a rule of, you know, as a rule of thumb, I guess. If you're facing a free kick, you get yourself in the position, of course, you react to where the ball goes. So you see a lot of goalkeepers that go early and get beat in their side. Credit to him, he didn't do that. But I just felt that it wasn't one of Ward-Prowse's best free kicks. And I think that had Jordan Pickford maybe just got himself set and as soon as it has gone over the wall, got a step in and exploded, I think he does have a chance of saving this. So it's just a little bit frustrating, if nothing else, where I just felt, could he have just got a dive away at least? And I think if he did, I think given how quick Jordan Pickford is, I think he has a great chance of saving this.
He definitely took that back a couple of yards as well, Ward-Prowse. From where the foul was initially given, Ward-Prowse definitely brought that back just a couple of yards to give himself the advantage, I think. It's funny how often that is never picked up by officials. But finally, you mentioned him there, Nick Pope, another clean sheet leading the Premier League at present, but quite a funny moment for the penalty. In fact, do you know what? We're going to go with one of these for this.
Bada boom, bada bing. It's only a keeper caper.
So it was the penalty which was converted, but then not converted by Alexander Mitrovic. And a bit of back and forth between Pope and Fulham's Bobby De Cordova-Reed. Just a funny moment where Pope tried to show his skill set, but didn't quite manage to pull it off.
Well, where he's tried to chip the ball up and do a sort of keepy up.
And failed massively.
I mean, again, look, it's fine. It's fine. This then feeds into the narrative, doesn't it, of what we're talking about earlier, goalkeepers that want to use their feet. Like, look, Nick Pope, do you know what? Nick Pope will just keep the ball out of the net more than any other goalkeeper, and when he kicks it, he'll kick it into a great area. What more do you want?
There it is, the music once more. It's been a while, Richard, but it is time for the EFL overview, where there were one-on-one wins for George Long and Victor Johansson. Long, unfortunately, on the losing side for Millwall at Middlesbrough. Johansson very much on the triumphant side for Rotherham at home to Blackburn. Freddie Woodman shipping four for the third time in 15 games as Preston lost to Norwich. Of course, a lot more to do with the Preston defence as opposed to Woodman himself. But an interesting contrast when you consider those nine clean sheets in the opening 12 games of the season. Tim Krul back in for Norwich 2 in that one. It's worth mentioning because Angus Gunn, you've talked about stats already in the show, is up on his stats, but not up on new boss David Wagner's team sheet. And Nicholas Bilokapic, or Bilokapic, I'd like to know exactly how that one is pronounced. Nicholas, if you're listening, please do let us know. Two big saves to very nearly bag his first ever EFL clean sheet. He's in at Huddersfield for now, with Lee Nichols undergoing shoulder surgery.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, just to mention him to begin, Bilokapic is how I think you pronounce it. But again, as you say, if it isn't that, please do let us know. But he's one that I've heard a lot of. I speak to the Huddersfield goalkeeper coach from time to time, and I know they've got real high hopes for him. And obviously with Lee Nichols, real blow for Huddersfield, him being out. But certainly Bilokapic is a top keeper, and a couple of saves he made here are excellent. You know, really, really sharp. The one top right in particular, so powerful. And then a couple of other moments, a couple of interesting points on the Preston defeat and Freddie Woodman in particular. I think there was I think all goalkeepers, we find ourselves doing this, that the guy's coming in on the corner of the box, he's advanced way down the line expecting it to be a one-on-one. But if you were to freeze frame at the point where the guy's at the corner of the box and where Freddie Woodman's position is, at which point the defenders have covered, what ends up happening, it gets squared across and it's in an empty net for the lad to finish in. In that particular point, there is the question then, do you stay that bit deeper? And it's always a bit of a judgment call. When someone's coming through one-on-one, the question, are your defenders going to come and cover? If they are, you can stay that bit deeper. If they're not, then of course, at some point, you have to advance, you have to engage. And I just wonder whether we went a little bit too early on this one. And the only other one was then, I think it was the fourth goal maybe, where there was that moment where you almost got a 50-50 and he's come out and looked to do a block action. Where you just wonder whether in a situation like this, is the old school run out, dive at feet, would that be a little bit more effective potentially? Again, it's always easy when and in hindsight when the ball ends up in the net to consider what else you could do, because ordinarily you come out here and you do the block, the long block, that would normally be enough in this situation. But there was just a slight gap, and unfortunately it found that gap.
Into League One, where there were a few firsts. So Ashley Maynard-Brewer enjoying a run of EFL games for the first time in his career. Clean sheet as a masked man in Charlton's second win on the spin against Barnsley. Josh Oluwayemi in for his first ever league appearance. Signed by Portsmouth after his release from Spurs in the summer. He was handed the gloves following West Brom's recall of Josh Griffiths last week. An indifferent beginning, I guess you could say, in a 3-0 defeat to Bolton, but one he will learn and grow from, no doubt. A mad goalmouth scramble greeted Ross Doohan's debut at Forest Green Rovers, brought in from Tranmere last week and straight into the thick of it as Rovers lie bottom of League One. And just one spot above them are Burton, who blooded newbies in nets and on bench in a sorry slump to Shrewsbury. Jordan Amisa on loan from Sheffield United and Craig McGillivray on a permanent from Charlton.
Yeah, so just to run through them, look, big credit to Ashley Maynard-Brewer. Did really well against Man United in the Cup. They lost the game, obviously a couple of late goals in that one, but made a couple of brilliant saves in that. And once again, big save in this, big clean sheet. Things just started to turn for Charlton. And it does seem like, certainly with McGillivray going out to Burton. It does seem like he'll have his opportunity now, so it'll be interesting to see how he gets on. Josh Aluemi, as you mentioned, bit of a tough... Look, it's always tough when, you know, surprisingly, Josh Griffiths gets called back to West Brom. You're thrown into the limelight, and it's tough. And do you know what? This weekend in particular, something we haven't mentioned, but the weather was atrocious this weekend. You know, for the games that I was watching, every single game, it was absolutely hammering it down. Not ideal for a goalkeeper, and certainly the cross that he did drop, I can't help but feel that would have played a bit of a part. You know, swirling around in the wind, come to catch it, it's slipped through the gloves, and unfortunately for him, ended up in the back of the net. And we saw it as well in the Burton game with Amisa. It's, look, on the face of it, you look, and it looks like he's come to clear it, doesn't quite get there. So, of course, you'd question the decision-making. But again, from experience, I know, I feel like I'm not necessarily standing up for goalkeepers, but just giving a bit of an insight. And again, goalkeepers listening in, you'll know this. There's nothing worse than when a through ball's played and the wind holds it up, or it doesn't quite do what you think it's going to do. And how many times do you get caught out where the striker just gets a toe there before you and you end up looking a bit silly when you're 30 yards out and stranded? But I did feel this weekend we saw a lot of these types of mistakes, and I can't help but feel that the weather played its part.
Tell you what I didn't like about that Burton game, and a habit that I guess Amisa has.
Go on.
Towel in the net. Oh. Don't like it. Looks messy.
Mm.
Hanging off the net. Doesn't look right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, you can happily, I'm sure, you can make contact with him on social media. Maybe let him. I'm sure he'll really value your thoughts.
Let's all take a moment as well to appreciate the new sensation storming League One, or at least that's what we're going to call it, because Cole Rushworth really does have an arm on him, doesn't he? What a throw. We mentioned this a few weeks ago. This time it was the goalless draw between MK Dons and Lincoln, and this was pretty much the highlight of the game.
Oh, it's ridiculous. Ridiculous. And I've said it before, but he can throw it further than I could ever kick it. That's a good 20 yards into the opposition's half. And it's just it's a beautiful thing to watch. Like, he's so powerful. And, you know, I guess we talk about a lot of individual parts of goalkeepers' games that you would look to mirror if you're your young goalkeeper. Well, look, I'd certainly advise that. If you're looking to improve your throwing action, just watch him. Because I think even the way in which he builds up to a throw, like, you know, it's just perfect. And again, it's so powerful, and the execution of the throw, you know, more often than not, is absolutely bang on. Such an accurate form of distribution as well. So yeah, definitely something worth highlighting.
And into League Two, Ben Hinchcliffe. Not really spoken about him too much on the pod before. In a good vein of form for Stockport since reclaiming his spot from Liverpool loanee Vitislav Jaros. A couple of excellent saves in the win over Northampton. Another couple of excellent saves from Dave Richards, reacting to his crew return with great reactions in a 1-1 draw at Mansfield. It looks as though Arthur Okonkwo is on his way to Sturm Graz. He's on loan, or had been on loan from Arsenal at Crewe, played all of the games thus far. Alex Cairns, now with his third club of the campaign in Salford. An unfortunate start in front of Sky cameras last week, was banished this week thanks to a penalty save from Rob Milson, the AME seeing off Sutton on what is edging closer to an absolute pigsty at the Peninsula. Horrendous pitch there. And Jake Eastwood replacing an ever-present Richard O'Donnell at Rochdale, letting one slip underneath him. The winner for Colchester from Cole Skous.
Yes, just to touch on a couple of them. Felt for Jake Eastwood. I watched this game and I thought it was excellent throughout. And yeah, look, I know I've mentioned the weather before. It was one that, what I'd say is, when he's gone down to his left, he's gone for a scoop technique as opposed to twisting the hands and going down. It's an error that he'll probably never make in training. So I did feel for him on this one, because I thought up to that point he'd been very, very good. And even after that goal, you know, the rest of his game was spotless. But again, life of a goalkeeper, you know, often it is just one moment doesn't go quite right, especially if you lose the game by the odd goal, then, you know, I'm sure he'd have had a frustrating evening. And to speak for a couple of the others, look, credit to Dave Richards, got his chance now. And it'd be interesting to see what they do now moving forward. I think they'll give him a chance, certainly on the back of this game as well. I think he's given himself certainly a lot of credit and bought another game or two at least. You know, no doubt they'll bring in a challenge, but you'd like to think that he'll get a bit of an opportunity now. And Hinchcliffe, yeah, look, got to mention this. A couple of these saves are absolutely out of the top drawer. Phenomenal saves. And lastly, Alex Cairns, really pleased for him. It's one that, real frustrating time at Fleetwood. He's had to wait for that opportunity, and to go to Salford, who are only a few points now off the automatic places, you know, he's a really big character. So that, first and foremost, to go in there and add that positivity to the changing room, and then to yeah, to kick off his campaign. As you say, had a frustrating moment last week, but to have a game like this, clean sheet, real tough conditions, big penalty save. And at that point in the game, again, another game that I watched, at that point in the game, you just felt that Sutton were getting on top, and they did have a couple of chances after this as well. So you do wonder, had that have gone in, that could have changed the whole course of this game. But him making that save kept that buffer, and in the end, a good 2-0 win. Clean Sheet Club. Okay, it's back. Feels like a little while since we've done this, but it's time for this. Starting the Premier League, Robert Sanchez, Spanish shutout. Dean Henderson, back-to-back for the first time this season. Jose Sarr. David Raya, Spanish shutout, mark two. Nick Pope, cleaner upper. Kepa Arrizabalaga, much needed. Aaron Ramsdale, kicking the arm for Spurs fans. Into the Championship, Victor Johansson celebrating a new deal. Ari Muric, 5-7. Zach Steffen, finding form. Tim Krul, new gaffer, switch stopper. Dan Backman, happy hornet. Into League One, Toby Savin, 2 months in waiting. James Trafford, hat-trick. Marco Morosi, the boy from Barnoldswick. Ashley Maynard Brewer, on the EFL board. Jamie Cumming, ever-present since the start of 2022. Carl Rushworth, attracting attention. Cam Dawson, threesy-peasy. And finally into League Two, Nick Zanev, successive stalemates. Harry Lewis, Bantam's Brigade. Glenn Morris, Jill's Thrills. Lawrence Vigouroux, he's taking you back, he's taking you back. It's another one. Paul Farman, Barrow Boy and Blanca. Alex Cairns, Amy's account open. Ben Hinchcliffe, 4-5. And Sol Brin, when you're winning.
Very good. But who's Amy, Richard? Who's Amy?
I have no idea. Come on, I'm just reading what I'm again. I am like Ron Burgundy. That is what I am.
Okay, well, you've misread that one slightly because, of course, Salford are referred to as the Ammies. But we'll let that go, mate. That's fine. Amy.
Was it a double M? I thought it was a single M. Close enough.
Let's quickly do the table, where the last time we did the table was the end of October and the beginning of November. At that stage, the table was as follows, Richard. So on 10, we had Lawrence Vigouroux and Freddie Woodman. Vigouroux in 16, Woodman in 18. And then we had Ross Doohan and David Stockdale with 8 apiece. Doohan in 16, Stockdale in 17. Would you like to hear the table now?
Go on.
So leading the pile with 17 clean sheets, so 7 clean sheets since we last did the Clean Sheet Club, is Lawrence Vigouroux still at the top, 17 in 26. And then 4 underneath him, with 13, is James Trafford, with 13 in 26. And then we have 4 goalkeepers on 12. Ben Wilson, Joe Wildsmith, Daniel Backman, and Freddie Woodman still just hanging in there after that super start. Wilson in 23, Wildsmith in 25, Backman and Woodman in 27.
Well, there you go. I mean, Lawrence Vigouroux, 17. I don't think I ever had a full season with 17 clean sheets, and we're in January. It's just, I think the actual record, I remember someone telling me this the other day, I want to say the record in League Two ever is 26, maybe 25, maybe check that one out. But yeah, he could conceivably get there in March at this rate. And it's been much needed lately as well, because I think Orient already scored one goal in the last 5, but they're keeping that lead at the top. And a lot of it is thanks to Lawrence Vigouroux and all these clean sheets he's keeping.
Lovely stuff. Okay, just one final piece of admin that we have to cover, Richard, and that is, of course, this.
GK's on the way. I say GK's on the way. GK's on the way. I say GK's on the way.
So yes, as we mentioned at the top, there have been a few more movers and shakers from the Premier League down to League Two, and they are... Undisclosed deals for Joe Bursic from Stoke to Club Brugge, as we spoke about earlier on. Ross Doohan from Tranmere to Forest Green Rovers, and Craig McGillivray from Charlton to Burton. Deals until the end of the season for Tom King, Salford to Northampton, and Glenn Morris, Crawley to Gillingham. Sabrina D'Angelo has gone from Vitsho GIK to Arsenal. Janina Leipzig has gone from Bayern Munich to Leicester. That's on a loan until the end of the season. As is Jake Eastwood from Sheffield United to Rochdale. Archie Matthews from Swansea to Oxford City. And one more I thought would be nice to mention. Bit of an established goalkeeper, Soldini from Ilkeston Town to Matlock Town.
Couple of interesting ones in there. Of course, we spoke about Joe Bursic going to Club Brugge. Another one I'll mention is the Ross Doohan one, because that's, again, you kind of see, you know, we speak about it a lot. It's the goalkeeping jigsaw, because then no doubt by him going to Forest Green, you're going to see some movement at Forest Green now. Obviously mentioned McGillivray moving on again, whether that now means they'll wait for Jojo to be fit or whether they'll look to replace. But it is just a massive goalkeeping jigsaw. So with all of that movement, I fully expect that we're going to see even more movement next week.
Lovely, Richard. Okay, we need to finish this because you've got to go and get your hair cut, I believe.
Yes, my barber is here. He's waiting in the other room. I feel a little bit guilty because we have been doing this for the last 10 minutes and he has literally sat in there twiddling his thumbs.
Okay, just give him a nice tip.
Yeah, well, I'll give a goalkeeping tip. Yeah. No, I will give him I'll give him a wonderful tip. Maybe I can play him the podcast while he's cutting my hair. That'll cheer him up, I'm sure.
There you go. That's what you need. Richard, thank you.
Matthew, thank you.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Between the sticks, keepers
away.